Welcome in part two of our end of the year special. Myself, Johnson Wagner, Brendan DeYoung. And here we're going to address all the players, the key figures in the game of golf. And also one of the big issues we will discuss, which is the universal rollback being proposed by the USGA and the RNA. Settle in for part two of the end of the year special right now.
Today's Five Clubs podcast is brought to you by Golf Pride. Golf Pride knows that a grip isn't only a grip. It's the one piece of equipment in your hands on every single shot. You might not know it, but it has a huge impact on your game. In fact, Golf Pride recently conducted a first-of-its-kind study showing the impact of worn versus new grips. It showed that on average, a focus group of adept golfers gained an extra 2 yards of carry when they played with new grips. So what are you waiting for? Refresh your grips. Refresh your game. Visit golfpride.com today to learn more. Golf Pride. Respect the grip.
The Rory year, how would you describe Rory's 2023?
Average for him? I mean, he won 3 times?
Yeah.
Won the DP Tour Order of Merit.
Yeah,
like I mean, it's hard without to believe even, that. It's hard
to believe having that. Hit a competitive shot.
What was his majors? Was he top five in 3 of them?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty unbelievable that I just said it, but it's average for him. I think he set the bar so high that anything short of winning a major for him is an average year.
How would you describe his year?
What do the kids say now? Meh.
Is that what they say?
Yeah, meh. Like. Right in the middle. Very, very average. He set the bar so high for himself. I think until Rory wins a major, he's not going to consider it a successful year.
Yeah, and I think that, he would concur with that. He would acknowledge that. It's hard to disagree. The year was weird because, the U.S. Open was right there, man. I mean, it was right there. There are, the second at the Masters the year before, come on, man. I mean, he was never going to win that golf tournament. And the hole out, it's a great moment. It's nice. And he had the very odd throwing of the club. Golfers really struggle with celebration. Really do. It's weird. High-fiving, not a good skill. Anyway, U.S. Open right there. The other ones, he's hanging around. His role with the PGA Tour and with the policy board and being willing to stand up there and say, I hate LIV and I'll be damned if, they're going to take away what we've built here. I applaud him for that. That's not easy. Not easy to be the public face. And oh, by the way, get burned and blindsided on June 6th for the most part. I mean, he may have known something the day before, but not much. Not much. I applaud him for that part. Not easy to compartmentalize your work with all this other stuff you're trying to do to be the lead dog at a time where Tiger is absent and not being vocal and everybody else is kind of, puckering up and not saying anything. I give him big time credit for that. But at what point are we going to say, hey, man, the sand is running out of the hourglass here. When are we going to start to do that? Not soon?
I don't think so. I mean, he's kept himself in such good shape.
He has.
I'm incredibly happy that he stepped down from the PGA Tour policy
board. You are.
He had 2 years left on his thing. He, to your point, he was burned. I'd call it stabbed in the back on June 6th. He was the face of the PGA Tour. He has been forever, and he took that role, and they basically just spat on him. And so I'm surprised it took him as long as it did, but it just shows the kind of character he has. He's like, I'm going to finish out through the last meeting, and then I'm going to go ahead and step down. And I thought it was a brilliant move, and I think it's going to be better for his golf game going forward.
Yeah, and Rory's one of those guys. He hasn't had to deal with any major injuries. Like, you look through his career, there's been a little niggle here and there, but no major injuries. 2015,
the odd injury he had, kicking a soccer ball, couldn't play in the Open Championship.
Yeah, he hurt his back prior to East Lake this year, but nothing major. And as Johnson said, he's kept himself in such good shape. I think he's still got a really good, solid 6-7 years before we really start saying, okay, maybe the time
that's
has
totally
passed
fair.
For Rory McIlroy.
Physically, yep. Totally fair. Like, you look at him and you go, the guy's got more firepower than anybody. Here's my approach to looking at why it's like, for how long can he keep doing this and not cross the line in a major? He is such an outlier when it comes to the guy trying to go from major number four to major number five. I've mentioned this a couple times. I went back and I looked at every single guy who won at least five. The average time it took in years to go from four to five is 2.5. He's going into his 10th. The only other person who it took more than 5 years was Peter Thomson, and that's because he only played one major. He played in the Open, and he won five of them. So he played in a couple majors in the United States in that time frame. So it doesn't even really count. You know, you can go through all of them from Tiger to Jack to Hogan to Phil, all of them. Like, well, for Tiger, it was 2 months to go from four to five. But 2.5 years, man, this is his 10th year. He's dealing with something that's never been experienced by anybody in the history of the game.
I think Rory needs somebody in his corner that's nasty. Somebody that's horrible, that says, you know what, we are going to go stomp on these clowns this week.
Like Dennis Rodman.
So, be it somebody like that, be it some motivational guy, be it a caddy, just somebody.
So Rotella's not the guy. I think his messaging, you don't think
I think he needs somebody to say, all right, we're going to get just nasty on these guys and just go and throttle somebody.
See, I'm with you in this respect. And I asked him this question at the PGA. I said, do you ever go back and look at your major wins? And he said, yeah, I do. I said, well, I'm just your last major win, the PGA in 2014. I said, you were ruthless that week. And specifically that final day, you punted Phil and Ricky off that 18th hole.
Yeah.
Like, get the hell out of my way. I don't care how you feel about me hitting into you.
I'm hitting.
I'm hitting. And I'm finishing this thing. And I said, can you still be ruthless? And he said, yeah, but I don't think it's, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't think I need to be. It takes a lot of energy to be that way. But you know when he was ruthless this year? At the Ryder Cup. He was ruthless. He was.
Yeah.
And maybe he needed Joe LaCava to do what he did. But I didn't think he did. He was already in that mindset of, I'm going to choke you guys out. And you can say, oh, that's a different thing. It's a team competition. I don't know why 4 weeks out of the year he can't be ruthless.
I think it's the media obligations that he has. I think it's going in and answering the same damn question every time. And I know at the U.S. Open, he did not go into the press center.
No, he did not.
And I think that's the key for him. I think he's figuring out how he likes to get into them. And I think staying out of the press center Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is the new recipe.
I mean, I know they're completely different, but Tiger did it. He was in the press center. He had every single press conference. I know completely different humans, but
very different humans.
I believe he needs somebody to, I don't know, kick him in the ass and say, come on, we're just gonna go run over these guys.
Here's the thing about him in the press room that it's a really interesting examination, because I'm in there, I like being in there at these majors. When he comes in there, it's different from Tiger. Tiger has not ever had to be in a position of defending himself, because he never had droughts. He never had periods where, and where he was coming back. Well, okay. Yeah, but those were extenuating circumstances.
That's fine.
It was not about performance.
True.
It was about scandal. It was about injury. And you know what he did? If he had to, he'd get damn defiant on you and say, who out there thinks I can't do it? Because I'll write your name down. I'll keep that receipt. If he had to be that way, he could be that way. He didn't have to be. Fair enough. That he did have his periods of not winning. When Rory comes in there, I feel like naturally the media is going to say, you know, how do you feel about slow starts? Because you always get off to slow starts and your scoring average in the first round of majors is X. And you haven't won a major. And it's like he's having to get, like, defensive. It's like the shittiest way to start a week. And it's always on a Tuesday. I don't know. It's a challenge. Like, do you avoid it? like he did at the U.S. Open, okay. But you know he likes talking. He's a curious guy. He likes to share his thoughts. I think he's conflicted. Like, I want to go in there. And then at the PGA, I'm sitting there at Oak Hill after he had been at the Masters, and he's like baring his soul. And then he goes to Oak Hill, and he's given like three-word answers. I'm like, okay, now this is a different approach. I don't think I don't know what the answer is.
One of the things we learned in rookie orientation when it comes to media, and not that we've had the experience that Rory has, is that you can create the narrative no matter what question is asked of you. You can create your own narrative and get out what you want to say. So he just needs to, like, if you're going to ask him, why has it been 10 years? Maybe he takes that on to, well, I've actually been working hard on this. So I think he's done some of that.
I think that's the Rotella messaging, like, look, you at the end of the day, and this is true in life, you got to be your own strongest advocate, your own biggest fan, and your own, I mean, someone's got to love you. And I don't fault him for not trying to point out his own failures or misses or whatever. I just know that this has been a long time and nobody else has been in this position before. And oh, by the way, every year he's going back to a place that is the ultimate Rubicon. With all due respect to Sarazen in 35, he didn't even win a thing that was called the Masters. As Brandel Chamblee, it's one of the great lines he's ever uttered, he essentially won the Hero World Challenge in 1935. It was a gathering second of friends. Yeah. It was his second year as a handful of people. Hey, Bobby, how you doing? Good to see you. I mean, come on. He was manipulating pairings. You like him? Okay, you'll play with him in the final round. I mean, it was not today.
No, not even close.
So you think he's going to win the Masters?
I'm not going to pick him this year. I think he's going to win it. No, I think he's going to win it at some point. But yes, I do. I think he's too good not to complete it. But I guess you could say the same thing about Watson, Palmer, guys that were one away for so very long.
Both, obviously, those two guys. The other thing about it is that, you know, the PGA, it moves around. Like, the Masters for him, like, of all the guys who play professional golf, like, he's the one that's so well connected with that world that I see him as a regular member at Augusta National. But he's not going to be a regular member if he hadn't won the tournament, is he?
No.
No.
No, he's not.
And come on, man. He's not going to put on a green jacket and have dinner with his buddies 30 years from now if he hadn't won the damn thing. That's just the way the world is. That's why Jack and Arnold, they were regular members, and they got a closet full of them, you know? All right, let me ask you about Spieth. I don't think he was healthy the whole year. Thought he was compromised at the Ryder Cup. Can he be, not 2015, can he absolutely be a top 10 player in the world?
Absolutely. I mean, he just had his second baby at the end of the year. That adds stress.
Yep.
And that was his issue at the Ryder Cup. He blew Valspar, in my opinion, on 16. Hit it in the water right on Sunday. And he
blew it with that feeble putt on 17.
He did. And then he had a chance. He had multiple chances to win Hilton Head over Matthew Fitzpatrick, not only in regulation, but also in the playoff. And I just felt like maybe if one of those had gone his way, maybe he could have rolled into more, but missed the cut at the U.S. Open. Just didn't have his best stuff. But yes, he's a top 10 player in the world. The way he wedges it, he's actually driving the ball a little bit better now. And I think that's going to be the key to
drove it really well at Hero.
He did. I think that's the key to him.
Is he a top 10 player if he's right?
Yeah, I think he can be a top 10 player. I don't see him being a dominant player in the game again the way he was in 2015. I do see him as a top 10 player for sure.
Okay. I'm bullish on him. I think he's going to have a really good year. I think, look, it's life gets in the way of a lot of things. And the birth of another child, the injury he had with his wrist, I think, was nagging. I think he was kind of confused and frustrated probably by that. I thought he was compromised at the Ryder Cup for a lot of things. All the things going on personally with the birth of the child. I think he's going to win twice in 2024. And I think that he will find himself, as he always does at Augusta National, in the throes of it late. And he was. He was this past year. Now, Phil, he played with Phil, and Phil, I'll be damned, clipped him there on the last hole. But even though, you know, they were a distance back, he does what he always does at Augusta National. And here's the other thing. He doesn't have a good record, even though he's won the event. I think he's got a very good chance at Pinehurst. I think he has got a very good chance there. There is real width to that golf course, even though he is driving it better. But you tell me anybody from any distance, 30 yards, all the way around, all those putting surfaces, who you would put in the hand of somebody who is going to miss, all of them are going to miss 20 to 25 greens over the course of the week. He's number one for me.
Without it. I mean, Scheffler's a wizard around greens as well. But he, you know, to the point about missing it off the tee there, there's not traditional rough.
No.
It's the dunes and the wispy grass. And Jordan Spieth can be an escape artist there, which is like feeding into his narrative.
Yeah, without a doubt. That imagination's going to come out. As far as a set of majors looks for Jordan Spieth, this is pretty good. I mean, obviously Augusta, as you say, he's always in contention there. And then to Pinehurst right after that, or a couple months after that. That's he's got to be licking his chops.
Yeah, the Valhalla PGA where he's trying to complete the career Grand Slam, Valhalla, from what I understand, is undergone some change. I'm not a huge fan. I get it. The PGA of America owned it, and by virtue of that, they kept bringing the event there. David Novak. I don't know if David's one of the owners now. He's a Louisville guy. Love David. I hope they have a great week. I don't know that for him specifically. I swear, number two and him, I think it's going to work.
Think about the tournaments that have been at Valhalla and the drama that they've provided.
No question.
I mean, the Ryder Cup in 2008, it was much needed by the U.S. team.
But yes.
Rory, Tiger, Mark Brooks, all of those events were, I mean, the Tiger 2000 PGA at Valhalla
insane.
With Bob May was one of the coolest.
They played the first two rounds with Jack.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
No, it was they've had great drama there.
Yeah, it's great events on a very average golf course.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a totally fair way to put it. Justin Thomas bounce in 24.
Justin Thomas wins at least twice. I like what I'm seeing out of him this fall. I thought he played really well at the Ryder Cup. Justin Thomas is a resurgent player this year.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's trending in the right direction for sure. He looks like he's kind of rededicated himself as well. And you got to believe that this last year really took its toll on him, and he wants to bounce back in a big way.
A couple guys that absolutely took big steps in different ways. And let me start with Homa, because got his first top 10 in a major. And you can say, oh, come on, really? We're going to start to celebrate that? Look, everybody makes steps different ways in their career. A couple things. Winning outside of his home country. Good field, top-heavy field. Where he won in South Africa at the end of the year. And he was absolutely, unequivocally, the most capable, most comfortable, best American player at the Ryder Cup. I think he has gone to another level.
He's gone to another level. And when he won the Nedbank, too, he didn't even have his caddy on the bag, Joe Greiner. He had gone over, was rusty. And the way he performed and the way he looked on Sunday of that week, his short game is next level. He can make putts. And the fade he hits is so easy. Like Brendan knows, it's just it's automatic when he's on.
Yeah. Yeah, he's taken that next step, no doubt about it. As you mentioned, at the Ryder Cup, he was hands down the best American player, looked the most comfortable, looked like he was in it for the fight. And then I watched a lot of that Nedbank, and he's one of those guys, I think, that's going to continue to become more and more of a global player. He embraced the whole
yes.
culture over there, threw himself into it all. I think he's going to be one of those guys that you will see at the end of every year go play in Australia, go play in South Africa, and I think that's huge, growing his brand globally.
A couple things, like we were talking about guys who are valuable. Like, he's a really valuable asset for the PGA Tour. He's funny. He's good on social media. It's actually him. It's not a team doing that. He's real. He gives you his thoughts about all things. And the way that he handled the last hole of his singles match, like, you could see guys literally becoming totally unglued, getting too fast, trying to figure out, what am I going to do here? Him and Joe went, okay, let's assess this. Took a penalty at a time where you're going, you can't do that. And he did that, and he got up and down. I think the guy is, he's great. He's great in every way.
And he got knocked down, and he's worked his way up. And it seems like the progression of his career is on a really consistent path, and I don't see it slowing down.
Hovland. Is Hovland that guy? Can he be number one in the world mm-hmm. in 24? And is he unequivocally a guy that you look at over the next 5 years that if there are five guys better than him, something unusual has happened?
Oh, without doubt. I mean, we've seen him throw his name now into the biggest tournaments, had a great chance to win at Oak Hill. A little unfortunate there with the ball buried in the bunker. Played great. Where else did he play? Where else did he have a chance?
Well, he finished third at the Players, seventh at the Masters. Obviously, he won Memorial. He did what he did in the playoffs.
And then played the way in the playoffs. Yeah, he's one of those guys that his name's going to pop up in the biggest tournaments over and over.
And I think just the work he's done with Joseph Mayo on the short game, like you have a guy like that that ball strikes just the shit out of it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden now he's a world-class chipper. And then that's what he did there at BMW and Tour Championship. It really started to pay off. And it was paying off early, but it's that process. And that's maybe what we're looking at with Scottie Scheffler is that, okay, it's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to be the steady progression like Victor had over the summer with his short game. It was ridiculous. And now watching clips of him on social media, nipping it off a tight surfaces as opposed to chunking or sculling them, it's remarkable and inspiring to see somebody take a weakness like that and turn it into such a strength.
Yeah, it is. And I thought his second shot of the first hole of his first match of the Ryder Cup was like the ultimate tone setter, like, hey guys, watch this. I mean, I thought that was the ultimate, hey, we're laying our marker down.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, he's on the green in alternate shot and pulls out a wedge and chips it over a ridge so he could put more spin on it. You don't, like, you can tell more, but the amount of nerves that you must be feeling in that situation to have the confidence and the control over yourself to chip it off of the first green in a Ryder Cup, and by the way, the first match out, too.
Yes.
Like, it was
an ultimate tone setter.
It set the tone for the whole Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it really did. I think he's... If I said to you, most likely to win a major in 2024, would you start with him? Or would you go Rahm, Scheffler, Rory?
Scheffler for me.
Scheffler for you.
Because he's done it.
And yeah.
He's looking to, he's only won the one, so he's looking to go ahead and
I'd probably
and
go in your direction as well.
I'd go with Brooks Koepka.
You would?
Yeah. I mean, the way that guy
you're the one
shows
who picked
up.
Him. You're the one who picked him last year, and we're going, really?
Yeah.
Really? You're just trying to be different. Different and right.
But if you want to ask the question, a player to win a major that hasn't won a major it's unequivocally Victor Hovland.
It is. Okay. When you look at we mentioned number two, and we've talked a little bit about Valhalla, but as far as number two, I thought 2014 was weird. The guy made everything, and I'm talking about Martin Keimer, and it was such a yawner, and it was the first time people had seen the golf course with all the Bermuda grass stripped away, and it was fairway, of which there's a lot of fairway there, and then all the native areas, and you're seeing shots hit off fairways, and you're going, oh, God, that could be awful. And the reality is that there weren't a lot of shots, particularly by the guy who was leading it, ran away, that you're going, oh, God, he just hit it to 10 feet, and the ball had action on it. And I think it was really hard to get a read as to the way that golf course was presented to the players because it was a blowout. And, again, like I said, I'm watching shots, and I'm going, okay, it looks like a bad lie, but the result kept being good. What do you think of number two this year?
Well, I mean, I love number two, and Brendan and I played North-South Amateur there for years. He's got a couple losses to J.J. Killeen in match play with me on the bag.
You caddied for him in the North-South?
Well, I mean, I missed match play, so I had to go caddy for him, which I wish I had at least made.
What, your little Virginia Tech little carry bag?
No, a big bag.
but number two is incredible, and I love the options it gives with the dunes and the sand areas. I just don't think that the native grasses grew in quite as much in 2014. I think we'll see it a little more difficult, but that's what they want. They want maybe you get a good lie. Maybe you're in a footprint.
Sure.
Maybe you're up against the back of a tuft of grass.
Yeah, I agree. I played that U.S. Open in 14, and that's exactly right. The grass hadn't grown in, and honestly, I don't remember a bad lie when I missed one off the fairways, and we saw Martin Keimer. I mean, I don't think he ever had to really think about going out sideways or never really had a bad shot. I think it's going to be a little bit different now. The golf course has grown in some more. There's some more penalty when you do spray it off the tee. And I hope that's where it ends.
Yeah. The truth is that you guys, if you can get, you know, some integrity to the strike, you're going to produce a good shot. And when you put people in really dense Bermuda grass, it's that's not the case. And as much as I love the way it looks, and I love playing it this way, I didn't, you know, it turned into a Bermuda grass farm is what it became. I love what Corin Crenshaw did. I thought it was bold as hell that the resort said, we're going to do this. And it's worked out well for their business. The other thing is that, you know, fans, you better get used to it. Every 5 years, they're going there.
Well, it's
are you cool with that?
I'm very cool with it. I think Pioneer is one of my favorite places. I mean, my son plays a lot of junior golf, and in North Carolina, the road to high-level junior golf goes through Pinehurst in the state of North Carolina. So I love the resort. I love everything about it. It's, you know, some years it's going to be harder. I know it was brick hard and firm and fast that year in 14, but the edges of those fairways are just repellent. You can't land on the edge of a fairway when they're firm and keep it there. So I think that we'll see it play harder and harder, and I love it being there primarily because I can drive to it.
Yes, me too. Love it. Love everything about it. And I'm thrilled. And obviously with the USGA and their new golf house, which will be, I think it'll present itself in a beautiful way for the people who are there. And obviously the people who watch. How about Troon? Feeling about Troon at all?
I don't know enough about it. Obviously, I watched that duel between Mickelson and Stenson back in 16.
Yeah.
And that was unbelievable. Some of the best golf I'd ever seen. I don't know enough about the golf course. I know it's obviously one of the iconic venues that they keep going back to.
It's very crude. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It just is. I mean, it's straight out and loop and straight back in. And you got a little kind of like a trailer park right next door. You got giant planes landing. It is like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I mean, it's not the most aesthetically pleasing looking place, but it's a proper, I mean, it is as proper a links as it gets. It's out and in.
Do you think that's the west coast of Scotland in general, or is it just that?
I mean, Turnberry's right down the road, and Turnberry is as beautiful and as regal a place as there is, and Troon just isn't. It just isn't. I mean, I love it. I love the west coast of Scotland. I don't think it necessarily is a reflection of that immediate area. You know, I mean, Western Gales is right there. They have a lot of qualifying events that are obviously there. I think the golf course is good. It's produced interesting open championships. Look, 16, you can't ask for more. But if it's not like the old course, but if the wind doesn't blow at a place like that, it can be undressed. Seriously.
They absolutely did.
Yeah, and look, it happened at Birkdale. It's going to continue to happen at all of these places. I think it'll be great. Let's tackle the Tiger question. How do you tackle it as far as him in 2024? What's a reasonable way to look at Tiger playing golf in 2024?
I thought it was very promising when he came out and said, I'm going to try and play once a month. I think that's more than a lot of people thought he was going to play. I thought he looked pretty good this last week. He sweated a lot.
Yeah.
He's figured out that he's going to have to hit the ball a long way with his upper body, and you could see there he was
totally
jacked. But yeah, I think that's really promising. When he came out and said that, I think everybody was thinking we might see him for the four majors and that's it.
Isn't that kind of what he's saying other than maybe, look, we thought he'd try to play Genesis because it's his event. And then a Players or a Bay Hill to get a start in March. I mean, look, him saying I can play once a month, I don't think that means January, February, March, April, May, June, July, and August. I think it means let me try to play in L.A. If I can play the Players, great. And then if I can go four majors, then that's what I'm doing. That's kind of my interpretation of it.
When was the last time he played four majors, though? I mean, he skipped the U.S. Open a couple years ago. I don't see him playing all four majors, but I do see him.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Which one would he not play if you had a guess?
Probably Valhalla.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He had success there in 2000.
Yeah, but that lot changes. Like, I wouldn't.
It seems like a tough walk as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, if you said, well, he can get a start between Riviera and the Masters, where would you tell him to go? I'd say, go to the Players. Are you kidding? Don't go to Bay Hill.
I mean, he's won.
I understand that. But to me, the Players, he's a great tactician to begin with. I think as he's evolved, like that place point to point for him now, and ripping long irons off tees.
And it's flat.
and it's flat.
An easy walk. I think that would be a great start. And I'm excited. Like he the way he talks, I think once he hangs it up, he's done. And the fact that he's even willing to tee it up right now.
Do you really think he's done when he hangs it up?
I do. He's talked for his entire career about wanting to win, and that's the only thing that motivates him. Maybe he'll go play the Champions
Tour. You're damn right he is.
But I think once he feels like he cannot win a major championship or win a PGA Tour event, he's not going to just come be some figure.
As far as regular tour events.
Right.
Yeah. I do think once he gets a buggy at 50, he's going to kick their asses habitually.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
He'll go for Bernard Langer's win total.
I mean, what else is he going to do? But as far as, to me, here's the thing about him and getting excited about him. Why wouldn't you get excited? I mean, he's a once in a lifetime experience as a fan of sport. But if every time he plays feels like it's a beginning, how can he really build to anything? It's nice that he's there. It makes news. You follow it like you would. But to really believe that he's building appreciably to putting himself back into the deep end of the pool, it can't feel like everything is a starting over. So if he plays Riviera, let's say he makes the cut at a Riviera because that's a signature event that he said, hey, look, I want a cut in my event, and he's going to get it. Okay, so he plays four rounds there, and the upshot is that no repercussions, physically came out of the back end of it good, built, felt like there was progress. Let's say he can play the Players, and whatever that week is, again, physically, it's good, he's building. Then I'm going, okay, now this is more than just we've got to talk about him because he's Tiger Woods and he's in the field, as opposed to, okay, can he really, really do something here? That's what I want to see.
Yeah, if he can play a tournament and when he finishes, the first words out of his mouth were, I felt like I needed to knock some rust off, then I think we can start getting really excited about it. But every time he plays now, well, I was a little bit rusty. I need to sharpen up. I haven't played a lot. If he can...
I think the big thing that from Hero and after the surgery, the fusion on his ankle, the big thing is that when he came back the first time after the car accident, it was... I think it's a lot of bullshit, personally, that it took 4 hours to get it ready and then 4 hours to get it, you know, to cool it down.
He went the full Hogan.
I think that's a lot of time. But I think after Hero World Challenge, it didn't take him as long to recover. And I think that's the key to him being able to play consecutive events and starting to get that momentum that you want to see, that you so eloquently talk about going into the 2019 Masters, is that
you don't like when I go through the build.
No, I do. There was build. There's always build. But I think that's what you're looking for.
Yes.
And I think given the fact that he's recovering faster and better now, I think we may actually see that.
What would your 4-hour recovery look like?
I'll tell you exactly what it looks like. It's me ponied up at a bar with a cold beer in my hand.
In every what, 16, 18 minutes, or maybe 12 to 14 minutes?
I mean, it's starting out maybe 16 to 18, and then as it goes on long, maybe 10 to 12. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I just, when he says this 4 hours getting, like 4 hours? God, that's a long time to try to get yourself ready to do anything.
Yeah.
It's a round of golf. I look, if he can play three of the four, and I would go in your direction, like that. Let's say he has a really good week at Augusta National. Let's say he finishes 14th. Like, really, he's going to crank it back up 4 weeks later in Louisville, Kentucky? Another guy, like, if you look at his history at Pinehurst number 2, first of all, flat.
Yep.
Secondly, again, in terms of imagination, God, his chipping is so good, and to think that he had no idea what he was doing 6-7 years ago, that he was dealing with, you know, as he said, caught between patterns. Again, if he didn't have to play the 17th hole, he might have won 2 U.S. Opens there in 99 and 2005. I'd like him there. Why wouldn't you?
I mean, to the same point, you like Spieth. It's open off the tee.
Yes.
It rewards incredible iron players. I mean, and the imagination around the green. So, yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, Tiger could win multiple majors next year.
All right. As far as the management of the PGA Tour, how much different are things going to look at the end of 2024? I mean, as far as...
Andy Pazder's already out.
Yep.
Jay Monahan probably has to go. I mean, I love Jay, but I don't see how he survives it. And I think if he's still there and there's not somebody rallying the troops, you are leaving yourself more susceptible to live poaching players. I think if Jay Monahan's out, maybe that keeps a couple players if they like who the new guy is and what that new guy is saying.
If it, Brennan, if this is going to be much more of, hey, look, this is not going to be us just simply rubber stamping what you're doing for us as an organization. And no, we are now going to have, you know, real voices when it comes to the direction of this tour with respect to the players on the policy board, including Tiger. But if Tiger's not playing every week, is he still going to be willing to talk about issues at times where they're having player meetings and he's not in the field? Like, Rory took that role. Mm-hmm. And he did an admirable job saying, I'll be this son of a bitch that's going to stand up there and defend who we are. He's not there anymore. Spieth has taken on a policy board seat. There's Tiger. Here's Webb. Patrick Cantlay, I don't know. I mean, who's it going to be? Who is going to be the voice of the players?
I think you're going to see Jordan Spieth as the most public figure there, being the voice.
That's,
I think,
a big responsibility. Not that he's not capable.
Right. I think Tiger is. I think Tiger has thrown himself in there pretty deeply. I don't think he's going to be at the forefront as much as Jordan is, but I think Tiger in the kind of background will be there pulling the strings as well.
Okay. Jordan's already served a 3-year term before, yeah. So this is his second go around. He knows what to expect. I think he's kind of happy being back in there right now. And if you listen to Tiger's press conference, which I know you did, mm-hmm. Tuesday of the Hero,
yep.
He said he wanted to be on the board to make sure nothing like June 6th ever happened again without players knowing about it. So now that the players have 6 to 5 independent directors, if the players don't want something to happen, it's not going to happen. I'm a little bit leery that the big-time players have too much control over what happens with the PGA Tour. I think a lot of these limited fields are coming directly from that. So it's going to be a balance. There are some powerful men on that independent and women, Mary Meeker, on yep. that independent side. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they go. And if Jay's not there, who is the next commissioner of the PGA Tour is the most important question.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The comment, the term mule that Ryan Armour, you know, used and now has been, you know, picked up and people, the classification of the rank and file. It used to be journeyman, rank and file. Now it's mule. I think it's a very affectionate term. There's nothing more reliable than a mule. They don't talk back. They just do their work. They get a little sleep, and they do it again the next day. I mean, look at you guys.
Load us down, man. We're ready to work.
Some of the guys who have chirped at the end of the year, as we've seen this, hey, signature series, the PIP, and all that money that's going to them, and I know that that's going to go away in the form that it was, but it's a ton of cash. So the Chris Strouds of this world, Lonto Griffin, James Hahn, these guys going, hey, man, what about the little guy? It's important that those guys, those guys continue to have not only a seat, but their voices are heard, not just simply, you know, dismissed, don't you think?
It's important to me, but now that I've gone to this side of covering golf as opposed to playing it, yeah, being a mule, I've taken a completely different look at it.
Yeah.
And you know, my last 4 years on the PGA Tour, I played out of 126 to 150 status.
Yep.
And I was grateful just to have starts. Right, I could count on 15 events, and I was thankful to have the ability to go make money. And so when I look at guys like Chris Stroud and James Hahn and Lonto Griffin, they're not bringing anybody other than friends and family to the golf course.
Totally fair.
Or eyeballs on TV.
And you're not being mean. It's just the truth.
It's fact.
Yeah.
It's fact. And I hate the adage, if you want to, you know, it's play better. We were on the Nationwide Tour, and I, you know, narrowly missed my card and then narrowly missed it at Q School. And it's like, well, you know what? Play better. And I did. The next year I went out and I finished second. He got through Q School. And guess what? We got to go to the PGA Tour to prove what we could do. Someone who is around 400th in the world golf ranking. We were talking about it with John Rahm going and being I can't remember the word I used, irrelevant. Mm. Someone who's between 400 and 500 in the official World Golf ranking is irrelevant to the product of the PGA Tour. Sure. And I think these guys...
Not dissimilar from a backup left guard for... You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right. They're just, they are. They're irrelevant.
And by the way, the PGA Tour puts out $8 million purses pretty much every single week. So if you want a bigger piece of the pie, go out there and perform and earn it. Don't sit there and bitch that, oh, I stayed. Well, Liv didn't want you anyway. So if they had wanted you, they would have paid you and you could have gone, but they didn't. So now take advantage of the $8 million purses that we play for every week and go win one of them.
Look at you.
I love it when you get fired up like that.
You've gone full dark side television gas bag.
Seriously.
Let me ask you, when you did hear someone say, play better, what did you want to say to them or what did you say to them back in those days? Fuck all the way off.
I didn't want to say it, but yeah, basically no. But it is, it's true, and it hurts to have someone say that to you. But
yeah,
it's, you can always play better.
Sure,
I mean, yeah. Always. There's always a carrot dangling in professional golf, no matter what level you get to. There's always that one little level, at least for the mules. You know, maybe not for the number ones, the top tens, because you reach that mountaintop. There's really no other place to go. But for mules, you can get into the signature events. Oh, wait a second. Now you can be top 50 in the world. You can get into the majors. You can do this. And so just keep playing professional golf as a journeyman. It's a mule and there's a carrot dangling in front of you. And that's what gets you to work.
Yeah. I don't appreciate any of these guys less that are between 75 to 175, whatever. But the reality is that like every sport, stars drive the product. They drive the interest, they drive the advertising, they drive the sponsorship, they drive the purses. They just do. And I don't take the skill for granted. I don't appreciate it any less, but that's just a reality. And the fact is, if you guys can make enough cuts, and if you guys can pop just enough weeks, the living's pretty damn good to be hovering in that range. And oh, by the way, can we stop posting photos of Chris Stroud's boat on, like, poaching photos? I mean, come on, leave the guy alone.
Stroud's had a nice career. He's won once. He's been out there. I mean, I think he was a rookie around the same time as us. Yeah. 07, 08.
Like having a boat close. Makes him like a monarch.
The guy's had a wonderful career on the PGA Tour. And the
he
average,
stayed out there.
And the average golf fan probably doesn't know who he is or pick him out of a lineup.
No, they couldn't.
And I feel the same way about myself. And so taking a broader look at it, like, I have great retirement. And yeah. I did nothing, really. I played golf on the PGA Tour for 15 years.
I didn't
drive anybody to the golf course.
Right. I always had this conversation with Kevin Ryan, who you now work with on a regular basis. I don't know if Kevin was with you at Golf Channel when you're up there. And we always wanted to talk about the guys who had the best existence on the PGA Tour. The ones who were good enough to make good money, but never were asked to speak to the media, could change their shoes and walk right out the door, walk down the street, never get approached for an autograph. A life of anonymity, but a pocketbook of, you know, making a couple million bucks. It's a pretty nice life. I mean, the overwhelming majority of people who play professionally. And by the way, I asked this question of Lonto Griffin when he won in Houston. This was 4 or 5 years ago. I saw him and I said, I don't, this is not to be insulting. I'm really interested. Hey, do you think you'd ever hit a shot on television live? And he went, that's interesting. Last year at the Farmers, he said, I shot 65 on Saturday and I could not wait to turn my phone on and see all the messages. And he said, you know how many I had? Fucking zero. So I knew that nobody had seen me hit a golf shot. So the answer was, until he won, he didn't think that he'd ever hit a golf shot on live TV. There are a lot of guys who make a lot of money who have never hit shots on television. That's just reality.
That's an interesting way to look at it, and it's so true. Like, watching golf now from a totally different lens, I have a lot of friends that are on the PGA Tour, and I find myself not really paying attention much on the computer because they're not on television, much less live.
Yeah. I do think that, look, like we talked about earlier, I think it's really interesting when you have events that some events, there's weight because of the historical significance of the accomplishment. And every winner goes into a history book. But winning and the culmination of the dream and realizing it and understanding your limitations, like you hit balls next to somebody who's a freak. And you're all freaks if you make it out there. But you know what I mean? You're like, good God, really? Like Hovland? Like, can you hit it out of the center of their face like for the 1,000,000th time in a row? And you're next to them. And you don't get overwhelmed by it. And you go on and you possibly win. Like, those are interesting. Are 5-6 million people going to watch that on television? No. But that's okay. That's okay. I do think that there is great value from 50 to 150. It's just when it comes to the money, it's got to be disproportionate. It's just the way of the world.
Which is the way the purses are on the PGA
Absolutely.
Tour.
Absolutely.
Like, the model is fine. And I'm fine giving the top players a little extra bonus. And hopefully some of these guys, if they want to buy an equity stake in the PGA Tour, they can. I mean, that seems like a good idea for whatever. I don't know how you're going to get money out of it, but I mean, like, give guys ownership in their tour.
Okay, since you now are both just total media gas bags, let's see how closely you followed what guys were saying all year. I'm going to read you a quote. You tell me who said it. Okay. Why are you laughing? Because you don't read.
Yeah.
All right. I'm getting closer. When I do finally win this next major, it's going to be really, really sweet. I'd go through 100 Sundays like this to get my hands on another major championship. Who was that?
I know who it is.
You do? Yeah. Let me go ahead and say it.
It's Rory.
Yes. Yeah.
It didn't hurt that I saw his picture right there either.
Okay. Good grief. It's amazing.
That's how I got
can we
college.
Call it? Can we call it two-stroke infraction? I got the Patrick Reed of five clubs. Oh, don't sue me, Patrick. All right, here's another one. I've always learned more from when I finish second, I guess, than the ones that I've won. I think failure is how you learn. You get better from it. You realize what mistakes you've made. Each time I've had kind of made an adjustment, it's more mentally than it is anything. It's not really golf swing or anything like that.
You know who that one is?
I mean, I have a guess, but I'd like for you to have a guess.
Jordan Spieth.
Ricky Fowler.
Brooks Koepka, after winning the PGA.
That's right. I remember that.
Now, I omitted when he said finishing second for the fourth time, because that would have been too much of a tell. All right, who said this? There's a really strong culture on the European team. It means about representing something bigger than yourself.
Paul McGinley.
It's a good guess.
Luke Donald.
Another good guess was Justin Rose. And that was in the winning press conference by Europe. I think the European Ryder Cup team, not the team thing is weird because the team changes a lot. As a franchise, I think it's one of the great sports franchises of the last 40 years. I mean, seriously.
It's well said.
In a sport where team is not associated with the pursuit, for them to do what they've done, substitute all the names and all the captains, and it's I find the European Ryder Cup team to be a hell of a franchise.
Where do you put them in relation with like the New England Patriots?
It's right up there. Again, it's not an easy discussion to have, but I think it's worthwhile. Like, what is it rooted in? And I think the word he used, which I think is overused at times, culture, but I believe this, and I talked to McGinley about this after the Ryder Cup. The All Blacks, that the great New Zealand rugby team, it's a culture. It's a culture of we are caretakers. I wear this jersey and I wear it proudly. I'm not entitled to anything. I am personally responsible to all of you. This is not about me. This is about us. I love that.
What's the book? Is it Legacy?
Yes. Look at you. Mm-hmm. Very impressive. All right, last one. I think it's the most atrocious thing you could possibly do to the game of golf. I think it's the most unimaginative, uninspiring, game-cutting thing you could do. That is somebody talking about
Justin
the ball
Thomas.
Rollback. It's a good guess.
Jordan Spieth.
Bryson DeChambeau.
Ugh.
What was that? Was that a sneeze?
No, yeah. Excuse me, I sneezed. Gesundheit.
All right, we're going to finish with that. I know you don't support the rollback, do you?
I'm more in tune with it. I like it across the whole game, personally.
You do?
I do. I think in 15 years...
Proud of you.
In 15 years, we're going to look back at this, and it's not going to make any difference. Remember when we went from square grooves to V-grooves? Just such a non-issue. There is not... I can't imagine anybody who's going to stop playing golf because the ball goes 5% shorter.
I couldn't agree with you more
on
that.
And so I think for the good of the game, and I like what the USGA said when they first announced this back earlier in the spring, this is not about the next 10 years. This is not about this generation. This is about 60, 70 years down the road make sure that the game of golf is still in the right place.
What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. And I agree with what Rory says, you know, amateurs aren't going to be able to tell you. They're not going to see a difference.
I mean, the same guy who fishes balls out of the lake
exactly.
and puts it on the next tee?
Yes, he's not going to be able to
which
tell
is
you.
Not, that person is not the aberration. They're the norm.
Yes.
The guys who, and I respect anybody who wants to go out and pursue this. It's fun. It's redeemable. It's a great activity. It's given me a great deal. But the idea that people are going to play less because if you did not tell people, I'm not talking about the nut jobs who watch these shows. I'm talking about the overwhelming majority of people who play.
Hello, everybody.
If you change their ball and they went out there, I'm talking about the majority of people, they wouldn't even know. They wouldn't know.
Not a chance.
And again, I'm not talking about the people who watch these shows.
It's when it's cold, when it's 50 degrees, ball flies 5% less than yes. when it's 75 degrees. So do you not play when it's 50 degrees because your ball's going to go a little shorter? I saw a guy today said he lives at 6,500 feet elevation. When he comes down to sea level, he sees like a 15% decrease, and he loves it because he can curve the ball more and he's got different numbers. Like there's nothing you can say that would change my opinion on the rollback. It's going to be a great thing for the future. The only thing that makes me sad is for a company like Titleist, who has spent their entire they are the golf ball. There is only one ball in my mind, and it's a Titleist ball. And so now all this research and development is going to get stunted. But I'll tell you what they'll do. They'll make that ball under that whatever the classification as best as they possibly can, and they'll try to innovate going forward with that those new limits.
Of course they will. They're the standard, and they will. Is there a cost associated with this? Yes. Similarly to the cost associated with water, land, maintenance, work hours, all the stuff that has gone with the increase in distance has been required to build a back tee for the vanity players who go back there 4% of the time. But that back tee still has to be watered, still has to be cut. Who's paid for that through the decades? The consumer has. The consumer, because the membership is either doing an assessment or it's somehow, some way, that cost is being passed off to the people who play the game, who are most likely not going back there. And the most important point you said is that I understand it's part of who we are as people. How's this going to affect me? God, just for one moment, look beyond yourself. This is about 50 years from now, 70 years from now. I was looking up when Tiger lost in the U.S. Junior in 1990. At Lake Merced Golf Club in San Francisco, it was at a yardage that was 9 football fields less than what the U.S. Junior was played at this year. 900 yards shorter than where they played Daniel Island this year. That's not the Tour Championship. It's not the BMW Championship. It's children playing the U.S. Junior. That's, I mean, and you're going, oh, that's 30 years. So where are we going to be in 30 years? If there is not guardrails put in place for this, I don't want people to enjoy the game less, but there has to be some preservation. Every sport has guidelines. What, you think a tennis ball has no regulation? A football has no regulation?
The way tennis, the serve had gotten out of control on the men's side.
It was ruining the game.
It was ruining the game, and they slowed down the ball and the racket to the point I think Andy Roddick had the fastest serve ever recorded, and that was probably 20 miles an hour faster than the fastest serve from this year, roughly.
Yep.
I mean, like, it happens.
Yeah, I if we're going to have this discussion, and I understand the stakeholders in the game, of the people who manufacture the balls, the people who are worried about the enjoyment of the game, and is it going to be less – we can have this conversation. Let's do it reasonably and sensibly. Let's not call people curmudgeons and bitter and architectural geeks, and those are the only people who care about, you know, preserving it or whatever. Let's be adults about this. I hope we can, because we have some time. And oh, by the way, for everyone who says, I can't believe this is such a knee-jerk reaction. No, it isn't. This has been going on. The USGA and the RNA have been totally transparent about all the information that they have been presenting to the public, including the comment periods that have gone on for months and months and years associated with all of these studies. The Distance Insights report was released almost 5 years ago. That this is not something they determined 3 months ago. So anyway, listen, boys, last thing. A gift that the game gave you this year as we wrap up the year. Brendan, what is a gift the game has given you?
Honestly,
in 2023?
The enjoyment in the game again. And
it's nice to see.
It really is. And I mean, I'm not going to get all sappy, but
why not?
Spending a lot of time around you guys that have an absolute affection for this game, love everything that it's about, has maybe rubbed off on me a little bit through osmosis. And I'm starting to enjoy golf again.
You're playing with friends. You're taking trips.
Yep.
You're laughing at yourself for being pound for pound the shortest player in the game. That was something you said, not me. I'm just repeating. But to see him playing the game and enjoying it and getting out and playing golf with you again, it's got to make you smile, doesn't it?
We've played hundreds of maybe 1,000 rounds of golf together over our years. And last week when he called and he's like, hey, you want to play golf on Wednesday? It was, I have the chills thinking about it right now. Yes, I want to play.
Did you say, who is this?
And after we played, I was dropping him off at his car and I said, hey, you want to play again tomorrow? And he said, I do. So we played back-to-back rounds. We got a tournament coming up in a week down at Calusa Pines. We're not going to play very good, but we're going to have fun doing it.
Nobody will out-fun you two at Calusa Pines. How about you?
I think a new superstar has been born this year. I'm very high on Ludwig Aubert. I think that he is the future of professional golf.
Wow!
I do. Guys, like, he is just like a prototype, and he's got personality. He's a good looking dude. I think he is the future. And I think there's going to be a lot of college kids coming up that are just like him. So I think the future is really strong.
But how about for you though? What did the game give you this year?
It gave me Brendan.
Give him back as a companion.
Yeah. And, I'm actually at peace this year for the first time in a while with my golf game. At the end of last year, I was stressing about trying to play. And now that I kind of put playing professional golf on the back burner, I think I am so less stressed about the state of my golf game. I still have my moments where I have the driver yips that stress me out.
Yeah.
But really, as far as life goes, no stress when it comes to golf.
That's awesome. I mean this sincerely. Look, I'm appreciative to be able to be around the game. I greatly appreciate you guys, because what we want to do here is hear from people that people respect, like, and appreciate their viewpoint on the game. And we're lucky here to have contributors like yourself. The fact that you are deciding, you know what, I want to talk about the game, and I'm gonna make the effort to go to St. Augustine and be on PGA Tour Live and get in studio and advance myself in that point. You obviously are becoming somebody, people are going, wow, he's really, really good. And your profile is only going to continue to go in this direction. But you two, Jay Billis, begrudgingly, I acknowledge that we value him, not much, but some. Obviously, Gil, Emma Carpenter, our entire staff. It's a gift. To see you wearing that logo, and you as well, even though you insist on having Millar in your chest. I thank you both, not only for this time, but the indulgence of being a part of this team. You have busy lives, you have families, you have careers that are going in different directions. Thank you. I greatly appreciate
it. Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, from all of us here at Five Clubs, it's been an eventful 2023. We cannot wait for 2024. Happy holidays to everybody.